Good evening, America. This is a Just Called Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman with Ethel Lopez and Cliff Stewart. You guys ready for this tonight?
Oh, we're ready.
All right. Let's go on and throw out the disclaimer. Cliff, Ethel, and I are not attorneys, and a Just Cause Coast to Coast does not provide legal advice. Please contact your personal legal advisor for your legal needs. Also, the opinions expressed by the callers and guests do not necessarily reflect that of a Just Cause or a Just Cause Coast to Coast. As always, want to say thank you for tuning in and choosing to spend a little time with us this evening. So our call-in number this evening, if you'd like to call in, ask questions, or make a comment, our number is 347-838-8976. Again, 347-838-8976. So, Ethel, you know, we're talking about the IRP 6 tonight.
Yep.
We're going to be talking about the business opportunity.
Yes.
But we got the situation, still have the situation, with the 200 pages of missing transcript.
No, we still have it.
So what's going on with that, and how can people help?
Well, we need to ask people tonight to pick up your telephone tomorrow morning. Call Attorney General Eric Holder's office at 202-514-2003 and 2005. And ask Mr. Holder to investigate what's taking place in this IRP 6 case with over 200 pages of missing transcript. You know, if that was his family member, he would be on top of that. He would have somebody on top of it. So we're asking people out there, you pick up the phone, get a couple of your friends to pick up the phone, and ask him what is going on. Again, that number is 202-514-2003 and 2005.
And then, you know, we also have the petition out there on change.org. Do a search on IRP 6. And you can plug in a search on IRP 6 / Attorney General Eric Holder, 200 pages. Sign that petition. And also, if you've already signed the petition, pick up the phone, like Ethel said, and call Eric Holder, but then also call a friend.
Absolutely.
Tell them to tune into this program. Tell them to go out there on change.org and sign that petition. We're trying to get those numbers up. Also, put in comments on there as to why you're signing that petition. Cliff.
And also, you know, I looked up something today about Eric Holder, you know, because some of the people from A Just Cause, when they call Eric Holder's office or, you know, people who are calling on behalf of the IRP 6, they're getting from them, well, this case is under appeal. There's nothing we can do with an ongoing case. That is a lie. Tell them, if they tell you that, how is it in the Ted Stevens case, that even before Ted Stevens was sentenced,
mm-hmm.
that Mr. Holder jumped in. Before the case was over, hadn't even made it to appeal.
Yes.
So if they say we can't interfere in an ongoing case, well, you interfered with Senator Stevens. I'm a citizen. You're a citizen. We're not asking you to interfere. We're just asking you open an investigation into where these 200 pages of transcript are, and that excuse about it's under appeal, it's an ongoing case, that doesn't hold water. Just mention Ted Stevens and how he intervened before sentencing happened, and that throws that one out of the bucket.
And you know, Cliff, right. Also on that, you know, you do an investigation on where the 200 pages are, then due process will take its normal course that it should be able to take.
Exactly.
It's not saying interfere in anything, like you
That's
just said.
Right.
But, you know, there does need to be some intervention.
Yes.
Not interference, but intervention in this situation with the 200 pages.
Absolutely correct.
So also, you guys, we'd ask that you would like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. If you want to, you know, jump on board as far as some of the things that we're talking about during the program, tweet it out there. You know, tell folks to get involved. Also, you can listen to us 24/7 on AJCRadio.com. Go to that website for our program schedules. Go to AJCRadio.com and listen to archives of our previous programs. And, Cliff, as far as folks, you know, helping out with regard to, you know, if they have contacts and stuff with major radio and television.
Yeah, if you have contacts with some, you know, large major television, radio stations, somebody who has a national platform, we ask you to get in touch with them and have them get in touch with us. You know, we need to spread the word that not only can these type of things happen to the IRP 6, but it can happen to any of us. So we want to ensure that we get that information out there on as many platforms as we can. So tell them to contact us.
Later in the program, we're going to dive deep into a little bit more of the IRP 6 story, and we're going to tell you some background on the business itself, the business opportunities that existed. And if you'd like to follow on along with us, you can go to freetheirp6.org. Again, freetheirp6, that's the number 6.org. There's all kinds of documents and information, background information about this case, legal information, motions, and information about the business itself. But you can start doing a little bit of research. Maybe you might come across something and say, hey, I want to hear a little bit more about that. Give us a call and let us know what you want to know. Also, just remember our brothers, Gary Walker, David Banks, Dave Zerpolo, Clint Stewart, Demetrius Harper, and Kendrick Barnes, the IRP6. We want you to pray for them every day. It is our goal through a Just Cause Coast to Coast and a Just Cause to get our brothers exonerated, bring awareness about this case, and so they can be home soon. Yeah. Our number this evening, 347-838-8976, 347-838-8976. Let's go to the news. Cliff.
Yes, in the news, we have this Montana judge, and we talked about him before. Mm-hmm. He was doing crazy things. This is the judge, District Judge G. Todd Bowe. And if you recall him, he is the judge who said that the 14-year-old girl who got raped by her teacher, basically that this girl played a part in what happened. His statement was, quote, that the teenager seemed older than her years and was probably as much in control of the situation as her instructor. Oh, well, we all know he's crazy. That he makes absolutely no sense. This is a 14-year-old child who was taken advantage of by a 54-year-old man, raped, and then this judge gave this man only 30 days in prison. Consequently, this 14-year-old girl ended up committing suicide. So not only do we have a child raped, we also have a dead child from this situation. Well, this judge, G. Todd Bowe, in Montana, is now being brought up on sanctions. It says that the panel said in a complaint filed with the state Supreme Court that Bowe undermined public confidence in the judiciary, created an appearance of impropriety, and justified the unlawful sentence by blaming the child victim. So they are going after him. They said that his conduct warranted disciplinary action, but they're not saying if they're seeking a reprimand or his ouster. But they are coming after him. They said the judicial panel had received hundreds of complaints about Judge Bowe after his remarks and this sentence that he imposed on Rambo, the raper. Basically, he gave this man 15 years and commuted all of it but 31 days.
And he should go serve them 15 years.
He sure should. I mean, how do you say commute all of it but 31 days and then give you one day time served so you spend 30 days in jail for raping a child and this kid ends up killing herself.
That's
so I'm glad to hear that this judge he's probably going to get, basically stripped off the bench which would be beautiful. They're really, really fighting to get rid of him.
He needs to get scraped off the bench.
Yeah, I hope he ends up in prison with his own personal chair. That would be very nice.
Well, and I think, Cliff, it doesn't say it in this article, I think he actually is going to step down anyway.
Yeah, he's stepping down.
But he had said it had nothing to do with this case.
Right. Well, they're going to see to it.
Well, they need to make sure that he don't get no kind of retirement from this thing.
There you go.
Yeah.
He needs to get hit on this one harder.
That's right.
And so that he can feel it in all kinds of ways, like you were saying, as far as even, spending some time. He needs to do some time.
Definitely.
So I know we pulled a couple of articles that's talking about the reduction of the population within the prisons. So what do we have on that?
Oh, there's this one from let's see here. Politics, White House seeks drug clemency candidates. Justice Department starts a quest for inmates to be freed. And this one is talking about how there are low-level drug criminals who were sentenced under the tough laws that said, during the days of the crack epidemic. And those are the ones, people that they are seeking right now to release them from prison if they've not been in any trouble, while in prison and stuff like that, and if they feel like they've been, they will do well on the outside. So Deputy Attorney General James Cole is asking the defense lawyers to help him locate prisoners and encourage them to apply for this clemency. And so that I think is going to be a very good thing. They say that the more low-level nonviolent drug offenders who remain in prison and who would likely have received a substantially lower sentence if convicted of precisely the same offenses today, that those are the ones that they are looking for. They say it's not fair and it harms our criminal justice system for these people to stay in prison. So that is a really good thing I think that they're doing there.
And I think it goes on to say, you know, that Congress is considering a bill that would make the new sentencing guidelines retroactive.
That's
this
awesome.
Could make up to, you know, 12,000 prisoners eligible for reduced sentences.
Exactly.
And so, you know, that's one of the things where, you know, the system was out of control anyway.
Yeah.
And so now they're starting to feel the pain, and then they continue to go back and ask for more money. We talked about this before on the program.
Right.
Where Federal Bureau of Prisons Director Charles E. Samuels has gone before Congress and saying, you know, how much stress his guards are under.
That's
because
right.
of the fact that there are too many inmates in the prison system, and they don't have enough people to, you know, to run the facilities.
Right.
And so now they're starting to look for options as far as reducing it.
Yeah.
And along that same line, mm-hmm. You know, on the sentencingproject.org, sentencingproject.org, there is an article that they just published, and they actually just published a new report last week. And it says that the United States is leading the fight, or U.S. states mm-hmm. are leading the fight against over-incarceration.
Yeah.
And it talks about the different states that are leading this charge to reduce the population within their prisons. And it says that their report shows that 17 states reduced their overall prison capacity by around 37,000 individuals. And so in 2013 alone, six states closed at least 19 correctional facilities, which the group says will save some $97 million over 5 years.
Wow.
Absolutely. And there was another article in the Huffington Post last Friday,
mm-hmm.
and they said, along the same lines of what you read, Sam, 17 states between 2011 and 13 either closed or agreed to close more than 60 prisons. New York led the way, announcing the closure of six prisons in 2011, six more in 2013. Florida also agreed to shut down 12 prisons, mostly in 2012, and Texas set out to close seven. Man, even Texas is jumping in. Illinois, Oregon, and Georgia have either closed or agreed to close four apiece. The closures and expected closures allow state governments to save, get this, $337 million plus. Wow. In 2012, like you said, Sam, over $97 million in 2013. So it looks like somebody's got their head screwed on right now,
right.
and they're going after this stuff. And maybe very shortly we won't be able to say America has the largest prison system.
All right.
We'll see.
Yeah, let's see if they can fix that. You're tuned to A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Our number this evening, 347-838-8976. 347-838-8976. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Mickey Palillo. I live in Bluefield, Virginia, and I'm a breast cancer survivor. 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetime, and last October, I became one of those women. Thanks to early detection, I have a wonderful prognosis. I am now one of the 98% who will survive. Battling cancer is not easy, but early detection, support from family and friends, wonderful doctors, and continuing research make the journey much more bearable.
We know you care. Now it's time. Time to change the face of justice.
Did you know that minority and youth participation in juries is extremely low to non-existent?
The incidence of youth and minority offenders faced with trials have exploded.
Youth and minorities are not being represented as they should be.
We must represent for people to get fair trials.
If you acquire a state ID or driver's license, it allows you to register to vote.
And it allows you to become eligible for jury service.
If you're 18, a U.S. citizen with a state ID or a driver's license, and registered to vote,
you're eligible to be called for jury duty.
If called and selected, make it your duty to serve.
We can't get justice without you. Change.
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 change the face of justice.
Check your local county or state jury service website for further details.
Can you imagine spending 20 years of your life in prison for a crime you didn't commit? Neither could I until I got the opportunity to portray Betty Ann Waters in the film Conviction, telling the real story of how she freed her brother Kenny. Sadly, what happened to Kenny happens far more often than you might expect. But together, we can stop it. Please join me in helping the Innocence Project fight injustice. Go to innocenceproject.org to make a donation and get involved.
You are listening to
Just Cause Coast to Coast, education, awareness, information about judicial injustice. Our number this evening, 347-838-8976. 347-838-8976. So, you know, last week we highlighted Gary Walker, the CEO of IRP Solutions, and talked about the man behind the software, the case investigative lifecycle software in IRP Solutions. So we're going to start our series of breaking down the story about the IRP 6 and IRP Solutions. This evening, we're going to talk about the opportunities that IRP Solutions had. So, Cliff, let's start off by giving a little bit of background on the company itself. And, you know, the company started in 2003, and it was IRP Solutions developing the flagship software called Case Investigative Lifecycle Software. Had many opportunities to come along to include the Department of Homeland Security, FBI, NYPD, and you know, when the company was contacted by the Department of Homeland Security, we're going to get deeper into this, but at a high level for folks who are not familiar with the story, when the company was contacted by the Department of Homeland Security, you know, we went to Washington, D.C., did demos for them for their Consolidated Enforcement Initiative, and then also for the Federal Investigative Case Management System. And when Department of Homeland Security said, we really like what we see. And so, you know, IRP Solutions, David and Gary, made a conscious decision to work with staffing companies to get the right kind of talent in there to help develop the software.
That's right. And, you know, when we had Andrew Albarelli in, who's the CEO of Remy Corporation up in Denver, Colorado, he talked to us about the risks that, you know, an entrepreneur takes, what it really takes to go after your dream, and how, you know, Andrew was the was going to be the star witness for the IRP 6. And when he got on the stand, Judge Arguello pulled him off and gave some bogus excuse as to why he could not testify. But when he was here and he got a chance to tell his story, he said how IRP Solutions did business as usual, how when the business that they conducted with the staffing companies, that's the way it's done, and that anytime an entrepreneur has a dream, has a vision, you put everything out there. You put, you know, you put your name out there, whether, you know, signing as a personal guarantor on a loan or debt. You go into debt because your dream is worth it. And, you know, as we've seen with the Silk software, to get called up by Department of Homeland Security and them say, hey, we've heard that you guys have something we need to see. Who wouldn't continue down the route saying, hey, if we go into debt, so be it. We have on the table, we've given Department of Homeland Security a $100 million quote. If we close that deal, we can pay off all of our debtors and continue to do business and help protect this country.
And, you know, and in 2005, all because of debt, and, you know, the federal government criminalized this debt. And in 2005, the company gets raided by the FBI. And so, you know, we've talked about this over the last few days. 8 years later, I mean, this is an eight-year, at this point, eight-year ordeal. Mm-hmm. We have six men that are sitting in prison right now, have been there for 18 months with substantial evidence to support an appeal. And, you know, the appellate process in the 10th District of the federal court system, it really needs to be revamped.
Yeah,
because when you have, like we talked at the top of the program, 200 pages of transcript that's missing, you got a Fifth Amendment violation, you have a speedy trial violation, and as you were talking, Cliff, Andrew Alberelli being an expert witness not allowed to testify.
Right.
All of this on the table when you, at the core of it all, you have IRP Solutions, which is or was a legitimate business developing a viable software. And we're going to take you back just a little bit. The guys, they did a roundtable. We're going to take you back just a little bit and let you hear from the words of the founders of IRP Solutions.
This is IRP Solutions Corporation. The company, the people, the solution. IRP Solutions Corporation, making it happen. IRP Solutions Corporation is a software development company headquartered in Colorado Springs, providing enterprise management software solutions for law enforcement and investigations professionals nationwide. IRP has completed research and development efforts, which resulted in the revolutionary investigative software, which is called Case Investigative Lifecycle, commonly referred to as SILC. IRP has a well-rounded team of professionals who have helped pull this project together. Software developers have, on average, over 20 years of software development experience, and subject matter experts have, on average, over 30 years of experience with various backgrounds in law enforcement, criminal justice, investigations, and criminal justice training. Agency experience covers DOD, CIA, FBI, Secret Service, state, and local law enforcement. The IRP in IRP Solutions is an acronym for Investigative Resource Planning. This is a concept whereby the investigations process is streamlined, systematized, and computerized. This concept can be applied to criminal, civil, and administrative investigations, and it is designed to allow for interagency, intra-agency, and multi-jurisdictional information sharing. IRP Solutions Corporation is recognized nationally among law enforcement agencies as a leader in the development of software used for investigations. IRP Solutions Corporation has been featured on several nationally recognized websites. IRP is also featured as a spotlight corporation in the October 2003 issue of the nationally acclaimed Law Enforcement Technology magazine. IRP Solutions Corporation, providing a software solution for law enforcement professionals, offering enhancements for the investigative process, investigations management, information sharing, and investigations training. SILC Software by IRP Solutions Corporation, a truly revolutionary approach to law enforcement investigations. IRP Solutions Corporation is very excited about the future of this company. IRP Solutions Corporation has developed an outstanding product, the company operates from a great facility, and the people have the drive and determination to make it happen. IRP Solutions Corporation, a leader in law enforcement software technology.
It's one of the most critical areas within the law enforcement is to ensure that things are getting done.
And our law enforcement men and women have a very difficult job to do. And they need tools such as this to make their jobs much easier so that they can work smarter and not necessarily harder.
Okay, so that clip came from the grand opening of IRP Solutions. And you know what's really disturbing about this, Cliff, is the fact that as the guys were going through the trial, you had the prosecution and assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch and the judge, Christine Arguello, would not allow the guys to even talk about the legitimacy of the business. And here you have a professional organization, and, you know, folks can go out to Free the IRP 6 and look up a lot of this information that we're talking about. But on the cover of October 2003, on the cover of Law Enforcement Technology magazine, They were the cover of that issue.
Yep.
IRP Solutions Corporation, modern investigation lifecycle software. It was calling, it was leading edge type stuff. I mean, everybody else, there was no one that could compete with what IRP was presenting. You know, and they had substantial research mm-hmm. to support the findings and how the software was developed. IRP's software, the Silk software, had a mapping capability, which was a huge requirement at that time. And what's weird is that even at this time, in October 2003, IRP Solutions had the client-server version of the software, and very quickly the market shifted, and everyone wanted something that was web-enabled. And the way Gary designed the software and the way David and the rest of the guys worked to develop this software, IRP Solutions was able to shift and present to the market, you know, what the market was looking for.
And that's what made IRP Solutions so, you know, so attractive to places like Department of Homeland Security. You have this huge agency, which is really a umbrella over several other agencies, and we'll get into that. But to have a company that basically would cater to what they actually need. You know, when they came to IRP Solutions and said, we need you to do this, we need this customization, we need you to make it, put a federal face on it this way and that way, they were accommodated, and they were accommodated very quickly. That is what made them continue to come back, because the other, you know, these other large government contractors, they were coming in, like I always say, they come in, and they have these PowerPoint presentations saying, this is what we could do if you give us several millions of dollars. Well, IRP Solutions came in with software and said, this is our software, this is what it does now, and we can modify it to do what you need it to do. Mm-hmm. And to prove that, when they asked for the customizations, it happened.
And, you know, Cliff, I think one of the things that blew people away was the fact that IRP was an African-American company. Mm-hmm. It was small,
yeah.
But look at how quickly things came out the starting block,
right.
And this company got recognized very quickly for a solution that was viable. And I mean, like you said, Cliff, it wasn't smoke and mirrors. This was the it was the real deal here.
Right.
And you know, as I look at a timeline that we put together, in August of 2003, IRP Solutions had a trip to Washington D.C. and we met with the CIO of DHS at that time. His name was Scott Davis, and it was like, okay, he stated that we have this initiative called the Consolidated Enforcement Environment Initiative Working Group, and they need to see what you guys are putting together. Shortly after that, we receive a phone call, and that's when Stephen Cooper from the Department of Homeland Security worked. He was a program manager for that project, and he wanted to see more of it. We did a web demo for Stephen Cooper. And then that got the ball rolling, and basically he basically provided IRP Solutions with a high level of the requirements that they needed, provided IRP with a concept document, and scheduled a face-to-face demo at that point. And that's when IRP Solutions, you know, went to Washington, D.C. And I always say that, you know, that demo was the one that it had the alphabet soup of federal law enforcement. I mean, you had agencies in there that fall under the Department of Homeland Security. You had also the Secret Service, Federal Air Marshals, FBI, TSA, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Mm-hmm. All of these people were in the room when we got in there. Gary and David hit it out of the park. I mean, you know, questions were coming from left and right saying, well, how did you do this? You know, how did you architect this? And and so forth and so on. And out of that meeting is when they said, hey, we really like what we see. Can you guys, you know, go and put a federal face on it? And then that's when the ball got rolling. I mean, we're going to share a little bit more information on this when we come back from this break. But IRP was on a fast track.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was one of the things that kind of, you know, shocked people, especially the large defense contractors.
Right.
They had never heard of IRP
Solutions. Yeah, they're like, who are you guys?
And IRP was showing them up left and right.
Exactly.
This is the Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. This evening, we're talking about IRP Solutions Corporation, the opportunity. Our phone number, 347-838-8976, 347-838-8976. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
federal government targeted. Prosecuted, convicted, six executives in held-back evidence. Hundreds of pages of missing manuscripts. Court circuit, 10th district denying the writ of mandamus. Free the RP6, critical rights violations and scandals. Their motivation to finish their business with major companies, the government, New York PD, DHS, potential customers. Come on. Faith attempt to obtain funding from banks and angel investors with no success. .com mail down, finance to skeptics so they hire a staffing company to fill the gap with every attention to fulfill the contract. So the deal with money come back, everybody paid the bills, the wages, take care of all of that. No Friday, they got viable software, but you compare them to those with nothing to offer. Prosecuted by the attorney's office before the FBI gotta start investigating charges, skipping steps in the process, even barring the testimony of Andrew Averell, a witness who could tell why any staffing company that could do a direct street credit check would stick out their neck if there was no prospect they could collect. When they're reeling the net, it all relates to Harvey Silver's late statements about the vagueness of federal law, judicial chaos, A_just_cause. Free the RP6.org, 347-205-9620, just blog. It's just us, but we don't gotta just talk. We can just march to the courts for the cause with one voice and just free them all. Come on.
Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Our phone numbers this evening is 347-838-8976, 347-838-8976. We're talking about IRP Solutions Corporation and the opportunity. Hey, we want to apologize for that initial clip at the top of the previous segment. There were some technical difficulties with it, so we understand that some of you may not have been able to hear everything that that was coming through on that. That clip, just to let you know, it was from the grand opening of IRP Solutions, and it was talking about how IRP Solutions was on the cutting edge and the leading edge of developing software for law enforcement. At that particular event, there were representatives from all of the local law enforcement agencies, state law enforcement agencies, judges, business leaders in the community. And it talked about how IRP Solutions was providing software for federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies. And so, you know, like we were saying as we were talking about it, IRP was on the cutting edge. And toward the end of that clip, you had Gary and David making comments to the effect that IRP Solutions was developing a software that would allow law enforcement agencies to work smarter and not harder. And they put a lot of effort into ensuring that this software did exactly that. Cliff.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you look at what I wanted to go over, you know, a lot of times we say, you know, IRP was in talks with, Department of Homeland Security, NYPD, and agencies like that. And what we want the audience to understand is just how big Department of Homeland Security is. This is not like, even though it is called one agency, the DHS, the amount of agencies that it encompasses, that it covers, DHS is an umbrella for just about every federal law enforcement agency there is. And so we pulled up the Department of Homeland Security's website and went out and checked on the department components and said, you know, who all does Department of Homeland Security cover? So I'm going to give you, because there's about three pages of agencies. So I'm just going to run through their names. You have Federal Emergency Management Agency, commonly known as FEMA, Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, Transportation Security Administration, the TSA, United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, the USCIS, United States Customs and Border Protection, CBP, United States Coast Guard, United States Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, United States Secret Service, Management Directorate, National Protection and Programs Directorate, Science and Technology Directorate, Domestic Nuclear Detection Office, Office of Health Affairs, Office of Intelligence and Analysis, Office of Operations Coordination and Planning, Office of Policy. You have all of these agencies that are under NYPD, and so
under the DHS.
DHS, yeah. And when you look at it, there's two amazing things that brings out. The first one is, how did IRP, as a small company, get to be on the top of their list of, we're going to use your software, the Silk software? That in itself is amazing. And even, you know, the people that I believe was it Stephen Cooper or Bill Witherspoon of DHS that said, how'd you guys get in my office?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Only the Oracles and the IBM did
yeah.
it.
Actually,
front
of that was the CIO of Department of Homeland Security.
Yeah, and I mean the department of all of these departments.
Mm. Yeah.
And the CIO of that has control over all these, like, how did you as a small business get in here? It's like the product brought us here. What we have brought us to this place to sit in front of you because it's better than what the other guys had. And the other incredible part of that is you look at what was on the table and you realize and understand that this is why these other companies fought so hard for IRP solutions. Like, we have to get these people out of the way. They're a small business. There's no way we can let them come in and be the sole proprietary offerer of the software for this many agencies. And when you look at it, you say, okay, from a business perspective, how much funding does all of these agencies as a group get?
Wow.
That is the amount of money that was on the table to say that we all are going to use this software. I mean,
Cliff, you know, and if you go back to what the fiscal year 2004 budget was for the mm-hmm. Department of Homeland Security, just at a high level.
Right.
And so, you know, taking it back to when IRP had all this attention,
right,
and the Department of Homeland Security was still relatively new.
Right.
Their budget at that time in 2004 was $36.2 billion. That's just one agency, the Department of Homeland Security, $36.2 billion.
Wow.
And you have IRP Solutions. And Cliff, going back to that situation with the meeting of the CIO,
mm-hmm.
and this guy saying, you know, how did you guys get in here? You know, only the big companies. If I recall correctly, waiting in the waiting area on that same day were marketeers from Lockheed Martin. And they were sitting there, you know, and so this guy is explaining, you know, that who was sitting out there waiting to meet with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you guys get in here? We don't even, you're not even on the map.
Exactly.
You know.
And you know, that's why one of those other companies, I think it was Bearing Point or somebody said, how many employees do you guys have? And they couldn't believe it. They're like, because like Oracle said, we have thousands of engineers that are trying to work on this software to get it where it needs to be for the federal government. And you guys got 20 people,
yeah,
and you're sitting in front of the CIO with something that's viable that they're telling you, what will it cost for one module? We want to put you guys in the budget. And that's why that is why the competition is like, no, we cannot let them. You guys, somebody has to scrape IRP out of the way because there's too much at stake.
And, you know, Cliff, when Stephen Cooper from the Department of Homeland Security realized the viability of the software that IRP was developing. He provided to IRP Solutions some documentation that mm-hmm. showed different scenarios, different kind of things that they wanted to have a software to have the capability of doing as far as being able to service the agents that worked within their agencies. And he said, this is for IRP eyes only.
Right.
So when, you know, when you're in that type of business and someone provides you with documentation that says not to be released outside of your organization, then you need to, you know,
I mean, you feel like you have, you'd be like, hey, we got a foot in. We have something that they want. Are we in debt? Yeah. Are we going to continue going in debt? Absolutely. There's a $100 million deal on the table. We need to go in debt to close that deal, and we'll be able to deal with the debt after that deal is done. It's the deal.
That's right. I mean, you know, when you get operations plans and all this kind of stuff, like you said, it's like you're a small company. And you didn't catch the big fish. The big fish came and swallowed you.
Exactly.
And then when people see this going on and folks say, well, especially the ones that, you know, we talk about that they say, well, maybe you guys are just a little bit of a conspiracy theorist or whatever. No, when you have hundreds of millions of dollars on the table, and like I said, back then they had a $36 billion budget. And for one, you know, and this was a smaller activity,
mm-hmm.
and they were interested in IRP's, the confidential informant module.
Mm-hmm.
That one module, IRP Solutions provided a quote for $100 million. And so when you look at the Silk software in totality, you had 18 modules there.
Right.
You have to know that IRP was going to eventually roll all of that out.
Exactly. I mean, that is the nature of business. It's like you put in the one module that gives them the, you know, quote unquote proof of concept. Once that's rolled out, they say, hey, this is working great. Let's bring some more of your modules in. And those other, the big fish, they said, no, we don't. We are not going to let you guys do it that easily. And that's when they came out. And suddenly, you got 21 armed agents popping in, claiming they're looking for financial records, but they're trying to steal the software.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, in October 2003, IRP Solutions was on the cover of Law Enforcement Technology Magazine. In February of 2004, I mean, just a couple of months later, February mm-hmm. 2004, IRP Solutions is in Police Magazine. And, you know, this is an article that was written by Bob Davis. And Bob Davis is a retired law enforcement professional. And so this is an independent look at what IRP Solutions had to offer. And, man, he just brought it on and showed all of the things as to how IRP Solutions was going to help modernize the investigations process within law enforcement. And so, and then what was the textbook? There was a textbook that IRP was in?
Yeah, the textbook, this textbook tells law enforcement this is how you conduct cases. Mm-hmm. This is how you manage a case. And the Silk software is laid out in that textbook. How do you have all of this, and yet the federal government, special agent in charge, John Smith, says, this is a purported software company. They really don't have anything. It's all a scam. When he already had talked to all of these places, he had talked to NYPD, he had talked to DHS, he had talked to the subject matter experts that were retired federal agents that were working in IRP Solutions, and yet they came after IRP anyway.
Hey, we're going to give more information about IRP Solutions, the opportunity to tell you about the different market segments that IRP was involved in. And, you know, when you finish listening to the program tonight, I'm pretty sure because you're listening anyway, you're already convinced that the IRP 6 did no wrong. But this is just going to give you more of that information to know that IRP was a solid, solid company that was developing something that this country needed. A Just Cause Coast to Coast, education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. We'll be right back. Social Security Coach, where we bring you educational awareness and information about judicial income. Where did I disagree with that? Our phone number, 347-838-8976. 347-838-8976. Cliff, let's go to the phones.
All right, on the phones we have our friend Jay Arrington. How you doing, Jay?
Hey, what's up, guys? How are you?
Doing
good.
Good.
Hello there.
Hey, how's it going?
How you doing?
I'm holding up, brothers. God is good. So.
Awesome, awesome. So, Jay, you just wrote a new installment to your series about the IRP 6. And for our listeners, Jay Arrington is with the Maryland Daily Examiner. And Jay has been writing a series about the IRP 6 over the last several weeks. And so, you know, we really appreciate the support. The guys appreciate how you write about their situation. So what you got coming out here in the next part of your series, Jay?
Well, what's posted, what we posted today, Sam, and is the American justice system. This ain't law and order. And it focuses on the unheard testimony of Donald Vilford of Cal Forensics, who the prosecutor had hired to evaluate the Silk software to see if it was real or not. And, of course, the findings that Mr. Vilford came back with were all positive for the IRP6 and their software. And as a consequence of that, the prosecution never called Mr. Vilford to the stand because it would have ruined their case against the IRP6. And that's basically what it focuses on, this particular article.
And that, you know, Jay, just for our listening audience who may not understand, that falls under the realms of what's called exculpatory evidence. And the prosecutor is, by law, required, if there's evidence that shows that the defendants are innocent or refutes some piece of evidence or some charge that the prosecutor has against the defendants, that has to be brought forth. And for that not to be allowed, for you to say, no, we're not going to bring that in, and for the judge to agree with that, that is sickening. It's also against the law. That is prosecutorial misconduct in the worst way.
And judicial malfeasance.
Exactly. You have evidence that shows that here, I mean, one of the biggest claims, these guys don't have a product, they're scamming staffing companies, saying they have something that they don't. And then you have, and it's not like Don Vilfer is just some guy off the street. I mean, this guy does work, this type of work for the federal government. He is their software forensics analyst. And when he comes back saying, oh, this software is everything that the defendant said it was, then you say, oh, no, we can't use him. He doesn't know what he's talking about. That is sickening.
Yeah, Mr. Vilfer, he was with the FBI for 15 years, and he specialized in white-collar crime and computer crimes. As a matter of fact, the findings that he came back with are, in a sense, intellectual DNA. That's what it is. I mean, it proves that, you know, you what you're saying, you know, it's almost like when you exonerate a rapist or an accused rapist and it comes back that his DNA was nowhere on the scene, you have to let the man go. And it's the same thing. If you get an intellectual report from your expert that's saying that, you know, the claim that you're making against these gentlemen is not true, then you have to let those defendants go.
Well,
if you don't do that, then you are guilty of prosecutorial misconduct, and the judge is guilty of judicial malfeasance for condoning it.
And you know that's the essence of forensic science.
The case, exactly.
I mean, you know, when you look at forensic science, it is a scientific finding as to the legitimacy of something, or you either prove or disprove something. And in this case, Don Vilfer, he said, you know, that the Silk software did not appear to be vaporware, but included a large amount of complex coding that would have required significant development. He's spelling it out here.
Yeah.
He's saying, you know, like Cliff, you know, he uses the term, you know, smoke and mirrors, and the term vaporware is a term that's in the industry. that's basically saying that, you know, it's just like smoke and mirrors. It's not it's something that's real, but Don Vilfer, he says this thing is real and that it is functioning as specified and that it would be something that would be applicable to law enforcement. Yes.
And there's another term in it that you just used, which Mr. Vilfer emphasized, it would require significant development. And that means that what the IRP-6 were doing with the staffing agencies was right along, was within the parameters of what they were doing. They were developing it to put a federal face on it as required by Homeland Security. That's exactly what they were doing with the staffing company. They were developing the software to meet the standards that the Department of Homeland Security has set forth. That's what they were doing.
Yes, you're developing a product to take to market, and that that's what's called, I don't know if anybody is familiar with this term, but that's what is called doing business.
Mm-hmm.
You have
a product,
you're marketing it to potential customers, and if the customers say that your product is not exactly the way that we want it, or can you add something to it or take something away? In this case, can you add customizations to the software? Can you put a federal face on it? And you say yes, you incur debt to do that. That is called marketing, and that's how business gets done.
And, you know, Cliff, one thing, too, when you look at this situation and when a person of Mr. Vilfer's caliber is not brought on the witness stand, and they do everything within their power to say, well, what he is going to talk about brings no value, in mm-hmm. essence, brings no value to this trial. You know, so it's like, what are they doing? It's like you're really trying to sabotage, and we already know that, the IRP-6. They just put a stranglehold on the IRP-6 as far as not allowing them to present a case whereby, okay, here's our company.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what our company was set up to do.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the software. Here's what the software is set up to do. Here we are, the men who do it, and we are professionals. We've been in this business for 15-plus years each, but you're not allowing us to share that part of the story? I mean, what's up with that?
Right, exactly, because sharing that part of the story would cast down the prosecutor's all of his accusations. If you cast that down and say, we're professionals, mm-hmm. we know what we're doing, we know how to do this, and then you have their own forensics analyst come in and say, you know what, they are right, they are professionals, they do know what they're doing, and they do have a viable product, it blows his whole case out of the water. But the fact that that was not allowed in and that the judge would have went along with it,
yeah,
that is the part that really makes your blood boil. It's like, you're supposed to be a judge. What are you doing? How do you let the prosecutor say, no, let's not bring that evidence in, let's hide that from the jury, along with other pieces of evidence, including 200 pages of transcript?
Absolutely.
Let's hide all of that so that nobody can see that, and we can ensure we lock these guys
up. And if she's hiding transcript, there's no way that she's going to not go along with them, you know, not introducing this evidence into, you know, for the jury to hear. Because the jury's going to come back and say, these people just lied on these guys, you know.
That's right.
These guys are not
exactly
doing anything. Here it is right here. They don't want that.
Exactly.
They're not going to have
that. That's the foundation of the whole case. Because the prosecutor is alleging that because there was no software, that it was a fraud.
Right.
So if there is software, then that means there's no fraud involved.
That's right.
So that's why they do that. And see, even when the prosecutor goes to the judge and says to the judge, you know, Your Honor, I respectfully request that, you know, I'm not going to present this expert as a witness, he has to show cause to the judge as to why he's not bringing his expert witness. So he had to tell her why, and so she went along with it. She's culpable in it also.
Yeah.
You just cannot strike a witness from the list without cause.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jay, where can folks find your article? And obviously we're going to be posting it out on Just Cause and on Free the IRP 6. But as far as the Maryland Daily Examiner, where can folks...
MarylandDailyExaminer.com, or either find us on Facebook and like us on Facebook and share the article with all your friends and your family.
Okay.
And make sure you call Attorney General Holder.
Absolutely.
All right. Jay.
Thanks so much.
Hey, Jay.
All
hey,
right, guys. God bless.
Thanks for coming in, Jay.
Thank you.
Always all good right. to hear from Jay Arrington, staff writer for the Maryland Daily Examiner. And so, you know, that article, Jay, you know, that's all the good points as far as Cal Forensics and all the things that Don Vilfer pointed out about the Silk software. And that also gives background on Don Vilfer and him being a retired FBI forensics software expert, also being a certified fraud examiner. And then Vilfer is also an attorney.
Yeah.
And so you have this man with these kind of credentials, and the jury never hears.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to talk more about the IRP 6, the opportunity in the business. Right here on the Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Our phone number this evening, 347-838-8976, 347-838-8976. Stay right there. We'll be right back. at Just Talk Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Cliff Stewart, Ethel Lopez, I'm Sam Thurman. Our number this evening, 347-838-8976. 347-838-8976. We're talking about the IRP Solutions opportunities and the IRP6 being Gary Walker, David Banks, Dave Zappolo, Clint Stewart, Demetrius Harper, and Kendrick Barnes. All these gentlemen brought up on trumped-up charges by the federal government, stating that IRP Solutions was a basically a front company and was, as the warrant stated, purportedly developing software, tried to be portrayed as, or the government tried to portray the guys as everything other than IT professionals, and tried to say that the company was running a scam, when we know that that is not the truth.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, when you have a company that's getting courted by the largest law enforcement agencies in the nation at that time for the case investigative lifecycle software, and then to have charges to come up like this, it's uncalled for.
Yeah, and you know what, I know that Silk encompassed quite a few different, I guess, segments or what have you, but your market area, I know there was something different for each of the different phases of Silk. You have the federal, you have the basic, you have the different ones. So in each of these, were you guys able to get an opportunity to either talk to people about each of these different areas or make sales in with these different segments of the software?
Well, you know, Ethel, at the time, as you said, you know, there were different categories of the software to accommodate different segments of the market.
Right.
And so IRP truly did have software that was conducive to state, federal, local law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had the Silk Basic, which was would help the smaller agencies because, you know, you have to look at it from the standpoint that the problem that occurred with 9/11, they said that the 9/11 Commission report said that, you know, law enforcement agencies across the board could not share information, could not collaborate information.
Mm-hmm.
So IRP Solutions set out to resolve that issue by being able to provide a software that would be conducive at all levels. Now, the smaller agencies, obviously, a lot of them, they were, like, way behind as far as technology was concerned. So the Silk Basic solution was designed for that, for the smaller agencies, to allow them to capture information that they could share up the chain.
Right.
Now, one of the things that they the smaller agencies didn't have, again, they were behind on technology. So IRP Solutions partnered with Dell Computer, whereby, you know, we had it, had the price point so low that every agency in the nation was going to be able to afford it. And at the local level.
Yeah.
So IRP Solutions had a deal where, you know, as soon as someone bought the Silk Basic software, we would put in a purchase order to Dell Computer. They would drop ship a brand new computer to that agency.
Wow.
And I think the price point at that time was like something like $695 or something like that.
Yeah, which then, you know, 2005, that was a very low price for
software,
a computer, and because
and
back
service.
Then, you know, you didn't just buy a computer and say, okay, you go buy a computer and you have everything you need. No, you had to buy the computer, you had to buy the monitor, you had to buy your keyboard, your mouse, everything. And so that price point for your software, your computer with everything that you needed and to be able to call us up for service, that was a very low price point. And then another thing, you know, Sam said that these, you know, the local agencies, they were really behind the times, and that has to be, you know, quantified, because if you look at NYPD, they were still using typewriters, type up their thing. So when you look at these smaller agencies, they were even more, you know, I don't want to say archaic, but they were not even caught up with that much time. A lot of their stuff was handwritten.
Wow.
You know, they take their notes and they put that in a manila folder. And I mean, when you say a case file, it was a file in a filing cabinet they go in and they look at. Oh, there's something with that name. And to have these filing cabinets with all the cases they would go through just in a month. Mm-hmm. Could you imagine trying to take that information and say, okay, we've had 100 cases this month,
right,
and trying to line those up and say, hey, we need information on these 100 cases that might coincide with each other. And so for them to have the technology and a computer and a software system that will say, all you have to do is put in a word, put right. in this person's name, and you can see how many times they have been interviewed. Mm-hmm. You can see how many times they have been interrogated, mm-hmm. and all these things. It would make their life and their job so much simpler, and quit wasting so much time with doing paperwork by yeah. hand. Because not only would Silk bring the data together, mm-hmm. but it also could make the forms that they would have to fill out or do on a typewriter. Mm-hmm. Because they would go in the field, they would. By hand write their notes.
Right.
And they come in and they have to fill out a form mm-hmm. on a typewriter. Then they got to take that form and they got to make copies and pass it around. So Silk automated all of that.
Wow.
So for every level,
yeah.
it would have been beneficial. And then
no
to have
kidding.
Your own country, your own federal government come in and say, we need to stop you guys.
Yeah.
And Cliff, on that point, we coined the phrase that the case investigative lifecycle software, Silk, would help the law enforcement agencies on cases from the crime scene through to the courtroom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it literally covered every aspect of what they went through. So from the out there in the field when they were collecting the information at a crime scene, and then they could, upload it into the computer, and it's there, and then it's available mm-hmm. for the prosecution,
right.
when they were ready to do their case.
Right.
I mean, IRP Solutions had a very smart mm-hmm. Business model.
Yeah.
There were over 40,000 law enforcement agencies in this country. I mean, and that included like 13,000 municipal police departments,
mm-hmm. right?
Over 6,000 county law enforcement agencies, 2,100 campus police, and then you also had schools and academies
exactly.
that have,
I saw that.
That have a law enforcement program.
Mm-hmm.
So IRP Solutions truly was covering the entire market.
Yeah.
So even down to the point, and we talked about it as far as being in the textbook, mm-hmm. down to the point of when someone was in school or at a law enforcement academy, that they could be trained on it. And to that point, mm-hmm. Southeast Missouri State University was one of the schools that made a purchase of a couple of licenses of the Silk software.
Mm.
And so that program I was telling you about as far as the drop shipping of the computers,
right.
they purchased it. There was another school that was supported out of New York,
mm-hmm.
But it was a school that was in the Virgin Islands. They bought a couple of licenses of it as well. There were a couple of other smaller sheriff's agencies
right.
that purchased the software as well. So, when you take all of this, and then obviously, we're talking about Department of Homeland Security,
exactly.
NYPD,
mm-hmm.
NYPD, the real-time crime center. And when you look at how Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch tried to portray IRP Solutions as not being a legitimate
right.
company, not having any viable prospects, I mean, IRP did the homework and knew what agencies were out there
exactly.
and what needed to be done in order to fill this gap. As a matter of fact, at one time in one of the first meetings that we had with mm-hmm. with a senator was Senator Ben Nighthorse Campbell. And Senator Campbell, we actually met with him,
right.
and he saw this and said, this is something that we need to be able to roll out to every law enforcement agency in this country.
Exactly.
Senator Campbell, he was going about and was going to, put a bill together that would help to fund this thing
yeah.
for law enforcement agencies all across the country. And so, when you look at it and you say, oh, no, that's, this is a software company that's purportedly mm-hmm. developing software
mm-hmm.
and it's all set up to scam people and all this kind of stuff. And that
understood. Understand how you feel.
Leaves you speak.
Yes.
We will talk more about this when we come back in a moment. A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Our number this evening, 347-838-8976. 347-838-8976. Sam Thurman, Cliff Stewart, Ethel Lopez. We'll be right back.
Metro Police Department.
Hey, we had some break-ins in my neighborhood, and there's a real suspicious guy. He looks black.
Did you see what he was wearing?
A dark hoodie, like a gray hoodie.
I think the hoodie is as much responsible for Trayvon Martin's death as George Zimmerman was.
Do I look suspicious?
Do I look suspicious?
Am I suspicious?
This guy looks like he's up to no good, or he's on drugs or something. It's raining, and he's just walking around looking about.
Are you following him?
Yeah.
Okay, we don't need you to do that.
You have to recognize that this whole stylizing as a gangster. You're going to be a wannabe. People are going to pursue you as a menace.
I am here to continue the research.
To fight him.
To fight my children and my grandchild. To fight for justice.
To write the next great American movie.
To give a voice to the voices.
I am here to foster a generation of young black entrepreneurs.
I am here to live.
I am Trayvon Martin.
This could happen.
Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Our phone number this evening, 347-838-8976. 347-838-8976. And before we go on, Ethel, let's kind of remind people of how they can help out, you know, just kind of touch again on the fact that we are still fighting for the IRP6 with regard to the 200 pages of transcript that are missing, and what we want folks to do, in case you just tuned in, what folks can do to help out and how they can find out more information about the IRP6 case.
Absolutely. You know, we are asking people out there, because you don't know if you may be the next person that this could happen to. So let your conscience be your guide. You know, we're asking you to just call Attorney General Eric Holder's office at 202-514-2003 and ask him to investigate what has happened with over 200 pages of missing transcript from a federal trial. You got six men that are sitting in prison. They've got families. You know, what has happened? What are you going to do to look into this case? And we're also asking you to pass it on and ask a friend to do the same thing. You know, check into your local radio and TV stations and ask them, hey, what's going on with this case? We've not heard about it.
Absolutely. And then also you can go out to change.org and sign the petition that we have going on. Go to change.org, put in a search under IRP Solutions or IRP6, and sign that petition so that we can get those numbers up and show the show of support for the IRP6. Okay, now back to the IRP Solutions story. We're sharing with you this evening information as to the opportunities. And Ethel, during that last segment, you asked about the different segments of the market.
Right.
We talked about Silk Basic. We talked about Silk Academy.
Mm-hmm.
There was also one that was called Silk Precinct. Mm-hmm. And then there was also Silk Federal. As far as Silk Precinct, you know, that was for your larger agencies like Atlanta, Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was actually one specifically for NYPD.
Right.
And so, you know, NYPD, it's so large, it warranted that IRP, you know, gave it its own, you know, basically customized solution. There were several trips to New York City, to NYPD.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, they were putting together what they call the real-time crime center.
Mm-hmm.
And Gary and David were, you know, doing what they needed to do in order to put together a software that would help the law enforcement agency there. They also had a process where they, what they call the DD-5, I believe it is, and that is a crime report, if you will. So when something happens, it's a form that they fill out.
Mm-hmm.
Gary developed something that would allow them to automate that process.
Wow.
And, you know, when you think about this and then you go back and I think about, you know, when we talk about patriotism and that type of thing, and we have to share the story of how when on one of the trips, you know, we were standing there in the hotel and looking out the window at Ground Zero because we stayed in the hotel right across the street from there. And when Gary looked out the window this was on an evening and we were standing there and just, you know, amazed at this big hole in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Gary, you know, said that that's why IRP was doing what it was doing. That's why Gary was doing what he was doing,
right,
to help to prevent another 9/11 type a tragedy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this software, something that had the jury in the IRP 6 case had an opportunity to hear about IRP Solutions and hear about the software that was developed, you know, I have to go to even back to the situation with the Department of Homeland Security. In the fall of 2004, the Department of Homeland Security, FBI, DOJ, they had what they call an industry day. And this was to pull all of the major defense contractors together and to share with them to say, hey, we got this initiative called the Federal Information Case Management System, and we want to pull this together. We need to tell you guys what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
IRP Solutions, again, was called by Bill Witherspoon at Department of Homeland Security and said, hey, the RFI, the request for information on this system just hit the street. We're going to have an industry day mm-hmm. in September. You guys need to or October. You guys need to come to this thing. It was the end of September, early October of 2004. IRP Solutions goes. Gary and David are in the presentation, and what they put up on the screen basically looks like the Silk software. Now, at this thing, you know, they're not going to – the government is not going to stand up there in front of everybody and say, hey, you know, we already got a company that can do this.
Exactly.
But in the hallway conversations – you know, the federal employees are telling these other folks that if you want to really get in on this, this company, IRP Solutions, has already developed something that fits what we need. And the phones start ringing at IRP Solutions where people want to partner with IRP Solutions.
Wow. That is
and
amazing.
When they did call in and want to partner – That is what is so crazy. You have these companies. They call up DHS. DHS says, you need to go talk to IRP Solutions. They've got what DHS is looking for. You need to try to partner with them if you want to come in and, you know, adopt a piece of this baby. When they call in and they don't want to sign non-disclosure agreements, they don't want to sign any partnering agreement that would basically keep them hands off from the software. They basically want to come in and say, no, we want to, in essence, be able to steal your software and run with it if we want to. Why don't you want to let us do that? Why can't we just go in? Why can't we just come together and, you know, you basically expose yourself naked to us, and mm-hmm. if we steal your software, you won't have anything to say about it. It's like, how stupid do you think that we are to give you free reign of the source code and just let you basically have it? And that is what was so stupid about the whole thing. It's like, you want a partner, but your partnership basically is a free, you know, a free ticket to steal the software. You want to give you the software and then say you're our partner.
So,
that's ridiculous.
So in other words, Gary's going to have a dream. He's going to develop this software, but he's just going to hand it over to whoever wants it.
Exactly.
Just like that?
Well, and, you know, you got to, again, go to the fact that there was a lot of money on the table with
Absolutely.
This thing.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, you look at because IRP was getting so much attention from the Department of Homeland Security, you know, the Department of Homeland Security had already talked to IRP about a $12 million pilot project. And then when you have a situation like this with the Federal Information Case Management System industry day thing where they're looking for a solution that will replace, you know, virtual case file, Sentinel Project and stuff like that. So, Cliff, you know, share with the listeners, you know, as far as the failures that happened with the federal government, why, you know, it is a viable software as far as what IRP had to offer, and it's a legitimate story. So, you know, when people say, well, why would someone be interested in a small company like IRP, and why would they be interested in a software developed by a small company like this, is because of the things that were going on. They didn't have anything.
Exactly, because you had SAIC, who was a large government contractor. There, you're talking about multi-hundreds of millions, if not billion-dollar company. And SAIC was contracted by the FBI to create what they called the VCF system. And this is a virtual case file. So this system was supposed to replace all, you know, their handwritten typewriter laid out system where they were doing everything by hand. This virtual case file system was supposed to basically replace that. Well, SAIC comes in, they put on their smoke and mirror show, put up a nice PowerPoint presentation and say, if you give us $425 million of the taxpayer dollars, this is what we could produce. So the FBI gives them $425 million, and when it comes to the end of that contract, there is absolutely nothing in hand. And Director Mueller in 2005 stood before Congress and was grilled. I mean, they might as well turn a flamethrower on him because they let him have it. Where is the product? Where are the goods for the $425 million that the FBI spent on this software? The only thing he can say is, we don't have anything. Mm-hmm. We're sorry. SAIC couldn't deliver. What they gave us is not what we can use. And they ended up scrapping the whole system. You're talking about almost $500 million flushed down the drain. Well, he makes these statements. Well, you know, we're looking for something. COTS program, and COTS, C-O-T-S, means commercial off the shelf, which was, there was nothing available. They spent 3 years trying to produce virtual case file. And then he says, well, we're looking for a COTS application. We should have something in about a year. How do you figure that's going to happen when you spent 3 years and $500 million and you have absolutely nothing? So they scrapped that. SAIC gets off the hook. Nothing happened to them. Oh, none of their executives got indicted. None of them are spending time in prison. Nothing happened to them. They just squandered $500 million taxpayer dollars, and they go about their way. So then the federal government then employs Lockheed Martin to create the Sentinel Project. Well, the Sentinel Project has cost to the tune of about $800 million. So you're talking about $1.2 billion on two systems that have completely failed. The Sentinel Project, when you read the Inspector General's report, that report says that if they implement those functions in the Sentinel Project, it would open up America to basically information leaks and terrorist attacks. So what that means in layman's terms, this is a piece of crap. We can't use it. Sorry, we spent $800 million more taxpayer dollars, and we have nothing to show for it. Where's the real solution? 6 men in a federal prison down in Florence, Colorado, nicknamed the IRP-6, and they have the real baby.
Right.
A Just Cause Coast to Coast. Education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. We'll be right back. Just Talk Coast to Coast, where we're giving you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Phone number 347-838-8976. 347-838-8976. You know, Cliff, this evening, and Ethel, we're talking about IRP solutions and the IRP 6. And the more we talk about the business side of this thing and what IRP solutions was all about, the madder you get because of the fact that when the government is saying that this company is not a legitimate company and it did not have a viable software, you know, we've only scratched the surface on some of the things that was going on. You know, when you have the company and it gets raided in 2005, February 2005, the company gets raided by the FBI. Now, we just talked about a lot of the activity leading up to that. So in September, October time frame of 2004, you're at a major event at the government, at the federal government, whereby they're announcing to the rest of the world, here's what we're looking for. And then IRP is getting called by all these major companies saying, you know, hey, we want to partner with you. And Gary and David, they were – and you were talking about SAIC, Cliff. That was one of the companies that called IRP Solutions.
Wow.
Deloitte was another company that called IRP Solutions. And we were getting email from, you know, Lockheed Martin. And these people, they knew based on what they were being told by someone that IRP Solutions had the software. And, you know, they were checking it out. I mean, you know they were going out on the website, but at the same time, IRP didn't put everything out there on the website. Now, Cliff, something weird happened from the standpoint that even after the company got raided, IRP, you know, went about to continue doing business, and there were still other prospects out there. One that comes to mind immediately is the city of Philadelphia.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Gary and David had said, hey, we're going to keep on marketing. We're going after these other agencies. You know, we're under investigation. We know we haven't done anything wrong. It'll be business as usual. So David finds, you know, in Philadelphia that they have a need. And when he goes there, you know, he talks to the deputy mayor. And the deputy mayor is like, you know, I could have sworn that you were sitting in my office because we have been looking for this. We're about to be sanctioned by the state. I think the judge.
He was going to fine them
like $1,000 a day for every day that they didn't have their solution in place. And I mean, a simple piece. And this is what makes it extremely interesting and really gives you a look at the genius of Gary Walker, because you had in Philadelphia, you had IBM and Motorola had been contracted to come up with a search warrant module that they could basically use to automate search warrants.
And electronic signatures.
Yeah, and you would think, you know, from a technical standpoint, and, you know, granted, Sam and I work with Gary Walker and the rest of IRP6, so we look at it, we're like, you're kidding me, you guys couldn't come up with that. But 3 years, IBM and Motorola had partnered to try to come up with this, and they couldn't come up with anything in 3 years. David goes there, talks to the deputy mayor, be like, and it's like, we can do that for you. Give us a chance to show you a proof of concept. They're like, okay, well, you got what I think they gave us like 3 months. In a few weeks, Gary sent David back like, there you go. There it is, complete. And they were totally and utterly shocked, like, how did you come up with this? But, of course, you know, then you have that partner thing, because people, what we need the listeners to understand is when they come up and they're saying, well, you have to partner with one of these companies, this or that, it's because in the government, you have to be a certain type of agency. You have to be an agency that has a certain type of license to do business with the government. You have to have been doing business for a certain amount of time and all these things. So they say, well, partner with another company that's a prime contractor with the government. That way, you know, you guys can work together and bring it in. Well, when it came down to partner with IBM or Motorola, of course, they're like, we don't want to give away
that's right.
this nest egg that we have. You know, we've been sitting here for 3 years. We don't have anything. We made $7 million basically for free.
Yeah.
And we don't want to give a piece of that away.
Cliff, I got news for you. I'm looking at it right now on the Technically Philly website, which is a technology website in Philadelphia.
Right.
IBM won that contract in 2002.
Oh, man. How do you?
2002.
So you're talking about 12 years ago.
Yeah.
12 years ago.
Yeah.
And they still don't have anything.
They just keep
giving them, well, here's something that might work. Here's something that might work. It's like, we need a search warrant module. And they just could not deliver it. And then when IRP delivers it, then, oh, here comes all the crazy stuff. The article pops up saying, oh, these men are under investigation. And then when the Inspector General office calls to find out, hey, you know, what's going on? These men are under investigation. Matthew Kirsch makes the strangest comment from any normal person's perspective. He says these men there's going to be an indictment coming down on this man.
Months ahead of time.
Now, this is after the first grand jury that said,
yep.
No, we're not giving you an indictment because this is corporate debt.
Mm-hmm.
This is before the second jury was even in panel. About 6 months prior, he says an indictment is going to be coming down. How do you know that an indictment is coming down? How do you make that statement?
Hey, Cliff, I got to read this because, you know, you got to know there's some listeners out there that are saying, you know, like you just said, Cliff, hey, Sam and Cliff, they worked at IRP, so, yeah, they're going to be biased, right? No. Okay, in November 13th, 2012, the website Technical Philly, it's a technology site in the city of Philadelphia. This article was written by Juliana Reyes, November 2012. The heading, the headline on this article says, Philadelphia police still uses typewriters.
Yes.
Successes, challenges, and opportunities in city's $7 million decade-long effort to upgrade police technology. In comes IRP Solutions. You know, and IRP Solutions was there ahead of all this, you know, before they could even say that they had these issues with money going down the drain. Right in the middle of this article, it says, following recommendations from an investigative committee in 2002, IBM won the $4.7 million contract to computerize the department's records according to a technically Philly review of the contract. IBM would develop a system that I would say they were contracted to develop a system that would automate three kinds of records, investigative reports filed during every criminal investigation, property receipts, and search warrants. Cliff, we are not making this stuff
We're
up.
We're not making this
right.
up.
We are not making this
I
stuff
mean,
up.
I mean, this is, it's out here. I'm putting the link mm-hmm. in the chat room.
Thank you.
All so right. that you guys can see it, that, I mean, the title, when you just look at the title of the article, and you're November 13th, 2012,
yeah.
and the title of the article says, Philadelphia police still use typewriters, successes, challenges, and opportunities in city's $7 million decade-long effort to upgrade police technology. How does it take you 10 years to upgrade? That's not an upgrade.
And
in 10 years, technology has changed. In 10 years, has changed 40 times.
You know, I think what it is, Cliff, if you look at that picture of that typewriter, that's an IBM selector.
Yeah,
isn't it
is, huh?
So,
yeah, IBM is selling them typewriters.
So they got them on both ends.
Exactly. And I think it all goes to the question is, where is the oversight? Where is the oversight for all this money that's being put out there over all these years, and you have absolutely nothing to show for it?
Yeah.
And then you got six men who can give you the answer that are sitting in prison. Who makes the decision on this crap? This is ridiculous.
Absolutely. And, you know, we didn't even plan on talking about this tonight. It's one of those things where, you know, we've talked about all the things that IRP was doing.
How can you not, though?
Yeah, and then you look at this, and the thing with the city of Philadelphia, it's just crazy.
Yeah, it is.
And here again is another situation where IRP was doing something to help the public.
Yes.
Help the city of Philadelphia.
Exactly.
And was going to roll this software out, and because they get a phone call that says these guys are about to be indicted, Philadelphia pulls the plug.
That's ridiculous.
Man, I'm glad we only got about 15 minutes left because I'm sitting there. Y'all see how I'm kind of raising up in my chair? It's like this stuff just makes you mad all over again. Our number 347-838-8976, 347-838-8976. The Just Cause Coast to Coast Education, Awareness, Information about judicial injustice.
I stand for equality.
I stand for individuality.
I stand for peace.
I stand for diversity.
I stand for dignity.
I stand for respect.
I stand for fairness.
Hey, Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Cliff Stewart, Ethel Lopez, Sam Thurman and the rest of the AJC radio team here in the studio bringing you the Thursday night edition. We're talking about IRP Solutions, IRP 6, Gary Walker, David Banks, Dave Zerpolo, Clint Stewart, Demetrius Harper, and Kendrick Barnes. We're talking tonight about IRP Solutions Corporation and the opportunity. And, Cliff, we were just sharing the story of the Philadelphia police. And, you know, even if you just look at the timeline there, that article came out in November 2012. Now, IRP Solutions was in the city of Philadelphia, I believe, in 2009.
Yes.
And so, you know, so that just shows even more so the ridiculousness. I think there's a TV show called
yes.
that. The ridiculousness of that situation. Philadelphia could have had a situation squared away 3 years earlier. And here's an article coming out saying they're still using typewriters.
And it shows that, you know, the prosecutor, Matthew Kirsch, and, you know, the Justice Department on a whole, for that matter, that they're not interested in getting justice. They're not interested in an advancement of the country on a whole. It's all about getting a conviction. If they have to hide evidence, if they have to lie saying there's an indictment that's going to be coming down, even though a grand jury hasn't been impaneled, if they have to, you know, disqualify expert witnesses, whatever they have to do, it's just about the conviction. It has nothing to do with the people of America being safe. It definitely is not about justice. The Department of Justice is the Department of Incarceration, as far as I'm concerned. But you look at it and you say, well, the Philadelphia is still using typewriter in 2012. I mean, if you think about that, a typewriter in 2012.
Who uses typewriter?
Who uses
That's
a typewriter?
True.
I guarantee there are probably people in this studio with us right now who have never seen a typewriter.
That's right.
I mean, if you put a typewriter in front of them, they're like, how do I do anything with it? What do you mean load the paper? Where is the monitor?
Hey, that would be like somebody, and I know I'm going to lose a few votes on this one, having an 8-track in their car.
Exactly.
It's like, why do you have a VCR in your car?
It's how do you listen to music? Put in the 8-track tape and push the button. It's like
an 8-track. What is that?
But I mean, when and you look at that and you say, okay, why did the government interfere with business? It on so many levels, it messes things up. IRP Solutions as a business lost business. You lost a small business that could help employ unemployed people. You basically cost the city of Philadelphia their daily
Millions.
Sanctions. Yeah, there's no telling how much they've paid not being able to do what the judge said they had to do without being sanctioned. And then you put 6 innocent people in jail, all because the prosecutor is just going after just a conviction.
Mm-hmm. And it was about impeding IRP's ability to do business.
Exactly.
And so, and like you said, it's a vicious cycle, Cliff, because of the fact that it impacted all the folks you just said.
Mm-hmm.
It impacted IRP Solutions' ability to generate revenue.
Mm-hmm.
If IRP had the opportunity to generate revenue, which the opportunity was there and they were going to do it, then the debt, which has been this whole situation is all about debt.
Right.
The debt would have been settled. There would not have been a case. So what does a prosecutor have to gain by calling someone and saying, don't do business with them? Because he did that with the Department of Homeland Security as well.
Exactly.
Called him and said, do not do business with them. What does this man have to gain by doing that? I mean, and at the same time, God forbid we have another 9/11, and you got 6 men that are sitting in prison who have developed software
That's right.
that could prevent something like this.
Yeah.
Now you got a city, a major city like Philadelphia, still using typewriters,
and they probably
could be
not the only one.
Yeah, exactly. They could be automated. And IRP could have easily settled its debts.
Yeah.
Easily.
And then also look at the staffing companies. They lost.
Right. That's the staffing right. companies actually could have had their debt paid instead of it having to be written off and them getting a tax break and, you know, taxpayer money paying for that tax break. Now, it leaves you speechless because when you look at it, you say as big as the city of Philadelphia is as a police department, think of the other smaller police departments
mm-hmm.
that are still using typewriters or writing things down, keeping them in manila folders.
Mm-hmm.
And the initiatives, like we talked about before, that IRP Solutions was putting in place to give every agent at a police department, to give every one of the officers, to say, you get a computer.
Mm-hmm.
Take the typewriters, donate them to somebody. I don't know. I don't know who needs a typewriter.
Right,
but
right.
Donate them to somebody. Get rid of them.
Well, part them out.
Part them out. Melt them down for scrap, something. But everybody gets a computer. You can automate the process. You can share data. Now we can come together and really fight crime.
Exactly.
Really fight crime. I mean, if you think about the time that they have to spend typing up stuff on a computer when they could be out. Philly has one of the – I mean, that is a violent place.
That's right.
And you have the police department, instead of them being out, on the beat fighting crime, they're typing stuff up on a typewriter when it could be as easy as pushing create search warning.
There you go.
Fill it out with the information and not even having to type that in. It would pull all the Silk would pull all the case data that you had, automatically populate the search warrant, and say, now email that to the judge.
Exactly.
And judge, do you approve or not? Put your electronic signature on it, send it back to the officer, and instead of it taking a week or however long it takes, you can do that in a matter of minutes.
And you know what? If you look at the time that they spend doing these reports in the police departments and stuff, and you hear about families who are, the father, dad's not home because he had to work late. He had to get these reports turned in. All of that stuff could be cut out.
That's
right. You get automated. Well, cotton picking computer, are you kidding me?
And you know, Cliff, I kind of shift gears just a little bit on you. Mm-hmm. We talked about NYPD a few minutes ago.
Yeah,
And since we're talking numbers, and look at the timeline of this. Now, the NYPD Real-Time Crime Center opened in July of 2005. IRP Solutions was raided in February 2005. We had gone and made trips back and forth to New York. We visited the Real-Time Crime Center before it was a Real-Time Crime Center.
Yeah.
I mean, I personally stood in there, and it looks like, War Central kind of place. You got this place and an entire wall full of screens, and it looks like you could have giant screens and the news broadcast coming from everywhere in the world, basically. So IRP was positioned to be a part of that. They built that center for $11 million. I don't know how much the software that they used there, how much they paid for the software, but that center itself cost $11 million. Now, let's say IRP was not raided in February 2005 and IRP was able to get a piece of that pie. Again, you got the a company that was generating revenue that was going to help a major city in this nation to help to fight against terror, help to fight crime and all the other things. There is so much that's so terribly wrong about this whole situation. Folks, we hope that we've been able to share a little bit with you as to the opportunities that IRP Solutions had, and to show that, this IRP Solutions Corporation was a serious contender in the market space as far as law enforcement technology and law enforcement software. Gary Walker, David Banks, Dave Zappolo, Clint Stewart, Demetrius Harper, Kendrick Barnes, there's absolutely no reason for them to be incarcerated right now. And a Just Cause is going to continue to do everything that
That's
we could possibly
right.
do in order to ensure they
and
get
Sam,
home.
And Sam, not only to show, not only do we hope that the listeners understand the opportunities that were available for IRP Solutions, but also that you understand the opportunities that the government interfered with.
Absolutely.
That if it had not been for Matthew Kirsch, the assistant U.S. attorney up in Denver, and John Smith, the special agent in charge of the FBI of this investigation, they interfered with commerce with this company and caused all of these opportunities basically to crumble. And in the end, now you have six men that are sitting in federal prison and have been there for 18 months with all these things on the table, especially the 200 pages of missing transcript. And it is sickening, and we need the audience to understand this can happen to you.
And
it can happen to you. If they took this debt and criminalized it, they can take yours and do the same
and
thing.
And don't forget, these families are in prison just like these men are.
That's right.
Something has to be done.
Ethel, what can folks do to help us out?
Well, they need to call Eric Holder's office at 202-514-2003 and 2005 and tell him there are six innocent men sitting in prison in Florence, Colorado. investigate that missing over 200 pages of missing transcript.
Cliff, that's right. And if you have a, if you know someone or have a platform on the national level that you can help us to get this story out there in a greater way, we'd appreciate it if you would get in touch with us. Let us know that you're out there to help, that you're willing to join in the fight. And when you call Eric Holder's office, don't let them tell you this is under appeal and we can't interfere. Tell them Ted Stevens had, the sentencing had not even been done, and you intervened there. We're not asking for interference. We're asking for an investigation.
Also, we asked you to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, go out to change.org, sign that petition, put in a search for IRP6, sign that petition. For our program schedules, go to ajcradio.com. You can also listen at live365.com, live365.com. On Tuesday evening, we're going to be talking about more about the IRP6 story. We're going to break down what happened during that FBI raid. We're going to talk about the warrant and all the things that happened with that.
We want to thank all of our chat room guests. Thank you for joining us and listening in to our production support team, K&D Productions, Captain Kyle and Dustin Jackson, helping out Ill Skillers Girl to make sure that you guys can hear us on the airwaves. Also, we want to say thank you to our production support team. Without you guys, we wouldn't have what we need to put on the show. And to the truth, we know that you're out there, and we appreciate you.
To Olivia and Miss Barbara and all of the HAC team, we thank you.
Jay Arrington of the Maryland Daily Examiner. Keep writing, brother. The guys, they really appreciate it. We appreciate your support. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Join us next week. Good night, America.
Good night.